Roger James Elsgood, and I'm with the Serbian writer, critic and translator Alexander Gatalica. Alexander Gatalica is the author of 5 published novels, including The Lines of Life, The Invisible, and his most recent work, The Great War, which has been published in the UK in November 2014. Alexander, I'd like to begin by asking about your work as a translator. You have published translations of Aeschylus, Prometheus Bound, Sophocles, King Oedipus, and several of the plays of Euripides, amongst much else. Would you agree that ancient Greek, being a non-evolving language, gives a translator more security than when working with living languages that constantly update and revise themselves?
First of all, you must understand when you are in contact with the Greek language, you are in contact with the deepest foundation, not of just of European languages, but with the European culture as well. And if you know the Greek language and you're in touch with that culture, you understand not just the Greek and the Latin culture and the language, but you're in position to understand whole European culture. And it is very good to know Greek and Latin language. And far more, if you're a translator, you have to go deep into the play, into the each verse, into the each word, and deeply understand the Greek spirit, the way of thinking. And this is very important, not just for translating job, but for writing job for me. I call myself usually the advocate of Euripides on Serbian language in 20th and 21st century. And I learned from him very much. He was a great artist. He knew how to manipulate the emotion of his audience. He knew how to approach to the spectator what is the spectator's expecting of him, of his play. And it is very important to learn how to communicate with your readers, even 25 century after Euripides. He's extremely modern, even now.
So, with the nature of language, that one wouldn't dare to call ancient Greek a dead language, but it doesn't have those kind of updatings that living languages had in terms of idiom, expression, new words, reconstructions of the language structure. Have you had experience of translating from languages other than ancient Greek?
No, actually, I'm translator just from ancient Greek language.
I see. But as a writer, your work has been translated.
Actually, I speak not just English, but Italian language, modern Greek language, and read on German language. So, if you know the Greek and Latin language, it is not problem to learn more languages, more modern languages, because you know this is in the European group of languages, and this is the same fundament for all languages, for all European languages.
So as a writer with a command of several languages, do you require yourself to translate your work, for example, say into Italian, or would you give that to a translator who has a specific reference to translating from one language to another?
Yes, it is important to know several languages, and when I translate for Greek, I use the translation or look upon the translation of my colleagues, translators from Italian, from German, from even Russian language, and compare how they solve some situation. I think that it is obvious that languages are connected. All portion of Roman languages are connected with the Latin language, of course,
yes.
Grew up from model of Latin language, and most of European languages are connected with the Indo-European base of Greek and Latin language. You know, just Hungarian and Finnish language and the Lettonian language is not from same group. They are from Hungarian groups of languages.
So would you say that translating from within a language group has less risk and problems than translating from one language group to another? Is that where difficulties might arise?
Certainly. When you translate for a modern language, either from English to Italian, either from French to English, or whatever modern language, it is a bit easier than to translate from Greek and Latin. Because if you translate from Greek some play like Euripides, which is 26th century old, you feel like translating not just a play, not just a piece of literature, but like you translate, if I may say, the monument. You must treat that words as a monumental words, and to be very, very care about the situation in what would you do in your own language when you translate from Greek to, if I say, in my case, in Serbian.
So here's a thought. How much accommodation should a translator make for a foreign language reader? Would you say that you are a hardliner who believes that the writer's intentions are paramount, or are you more relaxed with some aspects of localization? Where does the first duty of a translator lie, with the writer or the reader?
It is the question which you as a translator ask yourself in the very beginning of each translation. You must translate precisely, but you must be the artist also. And it is not possible to translate word to word. But you have to find out how to give your readers in a Serbian language exact and precise portion of words, thoughts, and characters, situation in a language. But you must realize that and it is not easy. But you know, Greek language is. As it is similar, it is not similar to, in the same time to modern language. So you make you must realize that you make a completely new situation. The spirit of English language, the syntax of English language, is completely different than Serbian, and you just can imagine how different it is in Greek. It is a problem if translator don't understand his final duty. His final duty is to make a beautiful piece on his own language. So you must be artist in the last step, but in the first three or four steps you must be translator. But in the fifth step you must be the artist. I've read plenty of a translation which was very good in first four steps, but not in the fifth step. We can find out completely precise translation, but without spirit. It is very good for me as a translator, but not very good for readers.
would I be correct, just as an innocent observer, saying that you as a writer, you deal with many things in the course of writing a book. One of them, possibly the most substantial, is the world of factual awareness. You know, there is a story to be told, a narrative to be driven. But would I be right in thinking that you as a writer are most happy when your work finds itself in the arena of the subtlety of poetry, you know, the precise choice of words to encapsulate a delicate or a complicated idea that can only be put together in a particular form of words that you come up with and you're very proud of and you think, yes, this is exactly what I want to say at this point. And then you hand that little jewel over to a translator who is not going to keep it preserved in the exact way that you would have it? Or is that just too much of a fancy?
You know, the writer must collaborate with translator if it is contemporary. The Euripides is not possible to collaborate with me. But I am in position to collaborate with Wilfrid, who translates The Great War. And we were not just speaking about the words, the stories, the characters. We spent much time speaking about the spirit of some situation, literature situation, the attitude of some characters, the irony. And if translator took the conversation with the author not just for a half hour and let's translate, but for months and even years, as Wilfrid did with me, he can understand the writer, and to my opinion, he can translate on a very good way one book to another language.
That's most interesting. I haven't really entertained the notion of active collaboration with one's translator. I've naturally simply kind of sent it off and it comes back. But you've been in you've met and you've conversed and you talk through things chapter by chapter, as it were. Is that your working process?
Chapter to chapter, even sentence to sentence, character to character, situation to situation. It was very acribic. We were in constant and permanent contact. So it is very important. And I found out that it is the only way to make fine translation in the end.
That's most interesting. Let's just have a focus on the worlds of literary and non-literary translation. Literary translation is a world removed away from literal translation. It requires a more subjective involvement by the translator, as you've just said. I suppose you've already answered this question, but it might provoke another thought. How can you be certain that the translator is on the same subjective wavelength as you, the writer? Well, you effectively said that it's a dialogue.
Yes, actually, it would be better if I speak English language such a good to translate myself. But it is not the situation. I find that I use English language quite well, but I'm not sure to translate my book. And in most of situation, you must leave another person to translate it. So if you have another person, you have to be a democrat in a bit. You must understand that he is a person also, and that he is a reader. And the reader's opinion is not same as a writer's opinion. The writer's imagination is different than reader's imagination. What I imagined during the writing process, it is not the same you imagine as a writer. So you must be, as I said, a little bit democrat and leave that person to finish the job the best possible way he think it would be done.
So again, possibly a question that you've also previously answered, but as a writer with a translator's awareness, are you generally satisfied with the translations of your works? Do different languages pose different challenges? Do different people pose different challenges?
Yes, I'm very satisfied. I'm lucky to work with very good translators, with the translators experienced. It is very important to be experienced in translation. And the translator who are not the bureaucrats, who are partly artists, which is very important, not just on English language, but on French language, on German language. I collaborate with very dedicated persons, with very determined persons to translate my books on best possible way. And as I said, what is important to me, they're artists. And they make that fifth step out of artistry in the end.
Let's just finally steer away from the world of translation and just focus on your book, which I really do believe is, I hope this doesn't come over as flattery, but I do think it's possibly one of the greatest pieces of writing that I've read in recent times.
And thank you very much.
I think it will go on to become a modern classic. It certainly deserves so. It has an unusual structure. Not that the structure is unusual, but you've written about a huge monolith, the Great War, in, well, a fresh kind of way. It's a war seen not as a war, but as the sum of its parts. It's rather like a cubist painting, that all the bits kind of are scattered, but they come together, and the picture that they resolve into is something wonderfully original. What was the provoking idea to write a novel in that form?
First of all, I initially don't want to write the novel about the Great War, but about the so-called Belle Epoque. Belle Epoque was the period in European history after the Berlin Congress in 1978 and two shots in Sarajevo in 1914. 38 wonderful years for Europe. The years of peace and prospective ideas, years of great development of science, transportation, even civil society. And in the beginning of the 20th century, the nations, the people thought that came in the best possible century, 20th century. It was like a dream. The celebrations of 1900 years was glorious in all parts of the world. And everything was stopped just in one day, just with the two shots, speaking literally, and not historically, of course. But I try to make book with enough representative of that Belle Epoque. So I realized that I cannot write a book with 2, 4, 6, 7, 8 characters. But if I want to represent that Belle Epoque Pax Putoto, I must take far more characters. And after all, it was 78 characters in this novel. And when I wrote the book, it was very hard a task for me to write. But this is the task I gave to myself. Nobody else gave it to me, but myself, but me. And I imagined my novel when I was in writing process like a washing machine, in a very fast rotation. And each of my characters don't want to stay in novel, but would go out. Because 78 of them, you know, they have own destinies and want to go out from novel. And it was a great effort, of enormous effort to put them back to the novel. And this is the first initial idea. But the secondly, I want to not to write so-called realistic novel. Not from the very beginning, I was determined not to write New War and Peace of Leo Tolstoy, because you know we live in 21st century. We cannot write as in 19th century. And if you want to write epic novel of 500 pages, you cannot. You're not possible in 21st century to write about one person, two persons, or several persons, but for many persons. And another picture, which is very, very amusing. Long time ago, I read about insects. You know, the insects has cells, plenty of cells in their eyes, and they saw hundreds of pictures in same time. So I realized that my book is like insects with the 78 eyes.
Just on a practical note, how did you hold all of those characters together? Did you make a drawing? Did you have a plan? Did you have a map?
Yes, yes. I'm the artist who divide the process of writing in two parts. First part is most hard part to planning. I don't write the first sentence unless I know how the last sentence will be. So the planning process lasts for three and a half years, and the writing process is just maybe a year. It is when I come to the writing process, it's easy for me. I solve all difficulties, all problems. I shaped all characters, their connection. And mainly, I don't have precise plans on a paper, but in my head. But I have some plans. But it is like scenario for film. This person will looks like that, and going to do like this and this, and then it will be turned to this and this, and this is like a. Like a kind of, not a novel, but a schedule or something like that. And after that, when I solved all problems without any words written, still, and when I realized that I solved all the problems, I start to typing. And it is a very, very good for me, because I'm relaxed. I solved all the problems. So I type for days and days and finish the novel.
That's absolutely wonderful. Alexander, thank you very much. It's been so illuminating talking to you.
Thank you.
Alexander Gitalik's book is published by Ipsos, and is available from November onwards in the UK.